Strange Stories UK here again for Series 4, Episode 10. Calling this one 2011 Drug Deal Stories from Port Slade in Brighton. Well, there are two stories in this podcast about small-time drug dealers that lived in Port Slade. Port Slade, an area connected to the conurbation of Brighton and Hove. I lived in the area for a time and enjoyed my time there. It was like an area from South London that had been transported next to the seaside. Well, this is the industrial area of Brighton serving the ports of Port Slade. I never saw any criminal behaviour when I lived in the area. A friend of mine joked that the main road of Port Slade, called Boundary Road, marked the divide between the genteel Hove and the Badlands to the west of the city. I always found the people of Port Slade friendly and kind. I suspect many families that lived in Brighton itself until the high prices and rents caused a ripple movement westward towards Worthing. There is Millionaire's Row in Port Slade, down near the beach. This is also next to the industrial port area. Adele, Heather Mills and Paul McCartney, Zoe Ball, David Walliams have all lived there within the last few years. I've been to the beach cafe near the children's playground, and Fatboy Slim, aka Norman Cook, has been spinning discs to a small audience near Hove Lagoon. The two stories that are in this podcast involve drug dealers that moved into the area of Port Slade from other cities. In both cases, Scousers, which I take to mean people from Liverpool, are blamed for the actions of others. The first story is about the disappearance of Gary Hampson, who happened to be from Liverpool himself, and so he could be called a Scouser, which I take to be an affectionate name for people from Liverpool, Liverpudlians. The other dealer was Sean Oran. I think he was born in the UK, but his parents were of Persian descent, thought to have fled to the UK as a result of the Iran-Iraq War during the 1980s. Lytton Western Street is a dreary back street just off the main thoroughfare that divides Brighton and Hove. It gets little sunshine as the street's so narrow, and there's no pavement, tall buildings on each side. It's a perfect place to run a drug business just off the main shopping area in the centre of Brighton, close to Preston Street and the Western Road with its bars and restaurants. The area is known for drug dealing and massage parlours. A police report this year, in 2021, showed that Little Western Street recorded the second most crimes of any street in Brighton, which is quite a claim for such a small back street. It's a known heroin hotspot. There are some car repair shops that will give you a good deal on bodywork that needs doing. I myself have had a car repaired there. Cop Cars, a company in 2011, was supposed to be a car body repair shop run by Danny Alexandra, who was age 61 at the time, and Gary Hampson, who was age 41. They both had criminal records, both had been to prison. Hampson for dealing in heroin and other drugs, and Danny Alexandra for a wide range of petty and violent offences. It's perhaps not surprising that Cop Cars was a front for drug dealing, which was the main business behind the car body repairs. There is a history of Liverpool gangs supplying drugs to Brighton and other South Coast towns, mainly heroin and crack cocaine. Brighton and Hove have the highest number of heroin-related deaths of any region of the country, partly because Brighton and Hove seem to attract an itinerant population of people with social problems. Heroin came from either London or Liverpool. Brighton was a top target of the Country Line dealers, according to the October 2020 study. In October 2008, the Brighton Argus newspaper, the local newspaper, reported a court case where four men of a gang known as the Scousers were dealing in super-strength black heroin. The drug turned the skin black when it was injected because of the strength. This resulted in 18 accidental deaths in the Brighton and Hove area in the first 5 months of 2008. The drug was sold by dealers in the Palmyra Square, Adelaide Crescent, the Hovery Recreation Ground, Old Shoreham Road and St Anne's Well Gardens. And these were all areas which were close to cop cars, or the premises of cop cars. The dealers were probably known to Gary Hampson. The Scouser dealers were jailed for less than 3 years, and they were out by the time that Gary Hampson went missing. There were thought to be several organised crimes from Merseyside, or Liverpool, targeting Sussex for selling drugs. In fact, in 2008, there were thought to be 60 organised gangs from elsewhere in the country, mainly from Liverpool and London, operating in Sussex. Every year there's court cases involving people from Liverpool selling drugs in the Brighton and Hove areas. Brighton being a profitable area for drug dealing, and there's also competition over turf, areas to sell drugs from in Brighton and Hove. Gary Hampson made frequent visits to Liverpool, the city where he was born, and he had many contacts there. He came south to Brighton in the 1990s, where he married Kelly in 2003. They had a daughter. By 2011, Gary had separated from Kelly and was in a business partnership with Daniel Alexandra with the business Cop Cars. Gary was now living at Benfield Court, Old Shoreham Road, Port Slade, which was close to a main road going in to the Brighton city centre. As said, Gary Hampson was an experienced drug dealer. Gary saw his daughter about 3 times a week and had a good relationship with her. He last saw her on the 6th of January 2011 when he collected her from school and took her to her mother's home. Gary Hampson then made a visit to Liverpool. He was thought to have arrived back in Brighton on January the 8th. However, he was never seen again. His phone was last used at 11:10 a.m. on January the 8th, and his bank account had not been used since the 6th of January 2011. Gary was reported missing by his family, but being an independent male, not vulnerable male, he was not considered a priority by the police. Daniel Alexandra was a small-time criminal that spent his life in and out of prison. During his last stretch inside prison, for which amongst other offences he was convicted, was for a robbery at a petrol station in 2005, where he threatened to set fire to petrol if the cashier did not hand over money. Anyhow, while in prison, Alexandra started a pen pal correspondence with a Linda Rosenberg, who was 60 years old at the time in 2005. She was living in a flat in Montpellier Road, Brighton, just around the corner from Little Preston Street where cop cars were. Linda Rosenberg herself had a criminal record dating back to 1975 when she was convicted for theft and assault. Rosenberg then had a string of convictions including driving offences, and she had served the prison term for dishonesty. As I said, her career dated back to 1975 when she was convicted for theft and assault. Linda was a poor judge of character. She was a gossip. She was estranged from her family and daughters. When Danny Alexandra left prison, he went to stay with her, and he soon fleeced her out of her life savings of about £46,000. He'd spent all this by the end of 2010. Alexandra, after his release, was soon involved in low-level crime, robbing off licences, drug dealing and other criminal behaviour. After Gary Hampson went missing, it was reported that Daniel Alexandra sold the equipment at Cop Cars, and also customers' cars that were in for repairs also went missing, no doubt sold by Alexandra. It was suggested that it was convenient for Daniel Alexandra that Gary Hampson had gone missing, as he was now able to take over the drug dealing at Cop Cars. It was useful income now he had spent all of Linda Rosenberg's savings. Daniel Alexandra was now working with a 57-year-old small-time criminal and street drug dealer called Roy Bartup, who was also staying at Linda Rosenberg's flat, although he claimed to have a home at Natal Road in Brighton. Meanwhile, Gary Hampson's family were very concerned over Gary, as it was out of character for him to go missing without telling family or friends. Rumours then started circulating. It was thought that Linda Rosenberg knew that her partner Danny Alexandra had something to do with Hampson's disappearance, and she started spreading rumours about Roy Bartup and another individual called Alan Topping having been involved in the disappearance of Hampson. It seemed that she was trying to deflect attention from her partner Daniel Alexandra. It was possible that Alexandra told Rosenberg some story, and she was so gullible that she believed it. A quick word about Alan Topping. Alan Topping regularly made the local press over burglary and small-scale robbery. One of his crimes in 2015 was robbing a Tesco Express store by knife point. It was a pathetic robbery when Bartup and another snatched £1,000 worth of coins and spilt most of them on the pavement outside as they made their escape. Topping was caught by police a few minutes away from the shop. He was sweating and could not explain away the two bags of pound coins he had on him, and so he was arrested. But his accomplice managed to escape. Topping, true to his criminal code, said nothing about the identity of his accomplice. Topping was given 10 years for his crime, as he had such a long criminal record already. Before he was jailed, it seems that Topping was part of a team that targeted auction houses after they closed during the day. Part of a team including Darrell Aldridge of Shoreham, Kelly Lambert, Anthony Townsend, Anthony Fortune, all of the Shoreham-Worthing area, Ashley Sims of Horsham, Luke Hammond of Port Slade. They were all career criminals and associates of Topping, involved in targeting auction houses as well as burglary at private houses. They targeted antiques. It was suspected that Topping was also involved with burglary with Danny Alexandra and Roy Bartup when they went breaking into houses in the countryside looking for antiques. In March 2011, an informant was said to have told police that Daniel Alexandra had told her he'd killed Hampson, and he'd heard Bartop and Nanette Topping discussing how they got rid of the body. It wasn't clear who the informant was. He was said to have been a woman who Alexandra was trying to impress by showing what a big bad character he was. This proved to be ill-advised. On the 7th of April 2011, the police launched a murder inquiry and arrested Bartop, Alexandra, Topping and Rosenberg. That's not quite sure, because Bartop and Alexandra went on the run. A story appeared in the local newspaper, the Brighton Argus, on the 14th of April 2011, saying that a 48-year-old man, Alan Topping, had been arrested on suspicion of murdering Gary Hampson. The police wanted to question two other men, Daniel Alexandra, aged 61, and Roy Bartop, aged 57. Rosenberg, who was now 66 years of age, was also arrested. The article said that the premises of Cop Cars in Little Western Street, Brighton, had been searched, and although there had been cleaning and repainting of the premises, the blood of Gary Hampson had been found by the major crime team of the police. So the police would not rule out the possibility that 42-year-old Gary Hampson had now been murdered, and they appealed to the public for information. During May 2011, it seemed that the police were searching all possible sites where a body of Gary Hampson may have been hidden. There was an intensive search at a remote area near Dunsfold during the last weekend of May 2011. Dunsfold, a Norman village on the Sussex-Surrey border, was best known for filming parts of the Top Gear episodes. Police were said to be looking for signs of disturbance to the land. They must have thought the body was buried. A number of other sites were also searched, and the police had now arrested Alexandra and Bartup. July 2011, Daniel Alexandra and Roy Bartup appeared at Lewis Crown Court. Alexander was now described as being of no fixed address. He denied killing Gary Hampson, although he was charged with the murder, and he and Bartup were charged with conspiracy to pervert the course of justice. They had been charged in May 2011 and were now both remanded in custody, and a court case was arranged for March 2012. The police were asking for information and help from the public, and on the 17th of June, an article appeared in the local newspaper from Gary's 10-year-old daughter, appealing for help to trace her father. Friends and family were also appealing for information about Gary. There were few developments until March 2012, when the trial that was supposed to start was put back until October 2012, possibly as new leads were now being investigated. The police had stopped searching for the body of Gary Hampson, although they were convinced that he had been murdered. So the trial was going ahead, as public prosecutions had ruled that there was sufficient evidence to proceed. The trial that started in October 2012 at Hove Crown Court lasted 7 weeks. On the first day, the jurors were told that Mr. Alexandra anonymously tipped off Sussex police officers that Gary Hampson had drugs in his flat in Port Slade. This indicating that Alexandra wanted Hampson out of the way. He wanted him arrested so that he had cop cars all to himself. When this plan did not work, it was then claimed by the prosecution that Deli Alexandra had hidden and waited for Gary Hampson to attend cop cars premises, attacking him as Gary entered the office on the 8th of January 2011 with a blunt instrument thought to be a hammer. Roy Bartop and Alan Topping were then said to have helped him dump and hide the body. Police thought that Hampson's body had been buried somewhere in North Sussex or Surrey. Police had searched 17 sites unsuccessfully in their search. These sites included ponds and stretches of the River Adur between Cowfold and Henfield. The sites were targeted after a Renault Megane, which was a customer's car, booked in for bodywork repairs, was caught leaving Brighton on police cameras on the 21st of January. It was thought that Hampson's body was in the boot of the car after Alexandra had scoped a site to hide the body. Later, police found Gary Hampson's blood in the boot of the car. Alexandra and Bartup tried to claim that they'd travelled to Surrey that day to commit a burglary. This was the evening of the 21st of January 2011. They both denied any knowledge of hiding a body. Alexandra's partner, Linda Rosenberg, was accused of perverting the course of justice by various means, including trying to persuade Bartup to admit to killing admit to the killing. Rosenberg also tried to claim that Scousers had killed Gary Hampson for unpaid drug debts. It does appear that Roy Bartup tried to big himself up by bragging to friends in London, or women in London, that he had murdered those that had crossed him. When police searched Rosenberg's flat, it contained a letter from a woman in London saying that Roy Bartup had told her that he'd killed Hampson. This may have been the informant for Brighton police. It was said that Linda Rosenberg was a gossip who could not stop talking. She came out with several theories over who killed Gary Hampson. It seemed that there was a gang in Brighton known as the Scousers, presumably from Liverpool, that supplied heroin and cocaine on the streets and council estates of Brighton. They were a convenient group to blame. To complicate the case, Kelly, Hampson's former partner, gave evidence from behind a screen to the court, saying that she had last seen Gary Hampson when he dropped off their daughter at her home on January the 6th. He then failed to turn up to collect her on January the 8th. She said when she asked Alexandra where he was, he said he'd gone to Liverpool and people from Liverpool had been calling saying that he owed them money. Because Kelly had phoned Gary Hampson's partner, Deli Alexandra, to try to find out where he was. Probably not a good idea, because it's very difficult to believe anything that Deli Alexandra would have said. Under cross-examination from the barrister defending Alexandra, Kelly confirmed that Gary Hampson had the nickname Hammer, as this was his weapon of choice when he fought. She also said that she knew that he had been to prison before they'd met, but did not realise that it was for dealing in heroin. She also said that large amounts of cash were hidden around the house. It seems a fair assumption that Gary Hampson was well connected to the Brighton drug scene and would have known the other groups of people selling drugs in the area of Brighton and Hove, especially from Liverpool. When Daniel Alexander gave his evidence, he claimed that he watched helplessly as Gary Hampson was attacked by another man over a drug dealing debt and was fatally injured by a hammer on the 8th of January 2011. Alexander claimed that he and Gary were sat in the offices at Cop Cars when a man appeared saying that Hampson owed him £2,000. Hampson refused to pay because he said the drugs were no good. Gary went to pick up his hammer, Gary Hampson, but the other man got to it first and whacked him two or three times as Hampson slid to the floor. Daniel Alexander said that he was in a state of shock as two other men appeared and took away Hampson. Then the men supposedly told Alexander that he was now responsible for the debt and he had to clean up the office, the site of the attack. Alexander was fairly certain that it was a fatal injury that was given to Hampson. The alternative scenario put forward by the prosecution being that Alexander killed Mr. Hampson after a row broke out in the garage they co-owned in Brighton. The fight was about drugs, and Mr. Hampson was a drug dealer. Daniel Alexander wanted to take over his business partner's drug dealing operation. After Hampson was killed, Alexander started selling off the equipment in the garage. It was revealed in court that police visited Cop Cars, the Cop Car garage, after Roy Bartop was thought to have been behaving suspiciously by someone who had reported him to the police. While at the garage, police found drug paraphernalia, but they did not believe they had enough evidence to arrest Bartop or make a fuller search. Detectives now believe that Gary Hampson's body was still in the garage when the officers were there, as they thought he had been moved on the 21st of January. A further scenario was given by Linda Rosenberg, who tried to convince Roy Bartop to say that he had hit Mr. Hampson with a paperweight in self-defence after breaking up a fight between Mr. Hampson and Alexandra, and then that Scousers then were looking for Mr. Hampson, arrived and took him away. Sort of backing up Daniel Alexandra's story, but saying that Roy Bartop killed Gary Hampson rather than the Scousers. Alexandra then addressed the court, claiming that he had taken heroin for 25 years but never dealt in it, and that he had nothing to do with the death of Gary Hampson. A detective told the court that the murder inquiry had begun after Hampson's blood was found at Cop Cars. The police said that there was little work done at the cars at the garage, from which Hampson undoubtedly supplied drugs at the time of his death, at which time he was deep in debt. He owed a lot of money. Just as the jury were about to begin their final deliberations, the courts were thrown into darkness thanks to a power failure on the 20th of December 2012. It took over 3 days for the jury to come up with their verdict. They were all found guilty apart from Alan Topping. Topping then praised the British legal system, saying that his faith in justice had been restored. It seems that he was either being ironic or following instructions from his solicitors, who he heaped praise on. The judge, Michael Lawson, told the jury that he was satisfied that the murder was committed in the hope of financial gain for the continued drug dealing from the premises, and that it was a planned and deliberate attack, and the intention was to kill Gary Hampson. Daniel Alexander was sentenced to 30 years for murder, 8 years for conspiracy to pervert the course of justice to run concurrently. He was also given a concurrent 6-year term for robbing an off-licence and 2 8-year terms for attempted robbery and wounding in Chichester Place in Brighton. It seemed very unlikely that Daniel Alexander was ever going to be released, given that his age at the time was 62. Roy Bartok was sentenced to 8 years for conspiracy to pervert the course of justice and a further year for possessing an offensive weapon. As I said, Bartok was a street dealer, and he carried a heavy ornament, marbled egg and a sock as a homemade weapon for protection. Bartok is now out of jail. He's living further along the south coast, westwards, in Littlehampton, and he now claims to have retired from his life of crime. Rosenberg was guilty of perverting the course of justice and was sentenced to 3 years. Rosenberg seemed to believe everything that Alexandra told her and was totally loyal to him. He spent a £46,000 life savings on drugs. And when he went into hiding, after he realised the Brighton police wanted to question him further about the Gary Hampson killing, he took Rosenberg's benefit money. However, Rosenberg had lied to protect Alexandra. She knew he was responsible for murder. It's unknown where Linda Rosenberg now lives. She would be about 75 years of age by now. This was the first case that Sussex police had secured a murder conviction without a body. After his conviction, Alexandra, who was still claiming that he was innocent, and he was not going to say where he dumped the body of Gary Hampson. He did appeal the case, but was unsuccessful. The legal system was criticised for allowing the expensive appeal, as no further evidence indicated an incorrect verdict, and his barristers received another £140,000 for their services from the public purse. Gary Hampson was a drug dealer, bringing misery to the streets of Brighton and Hove. He paid the penalty of his choice of profession and friends. His family and daughter are the ones that still suffer for his choices. Just 2 months after the Gary Hampson was murdered, there was a court case over yet another death caused by drug dealing from Port Slade. This became known as the Devil's Dyke Golf Course murder, and this court case started on the 8th of March 2011. Stephen Welsh had a tragic life. He was known to his friends as Mumbles. He was living in a hostel at Oriental Place, Brighton, just before Brighton turns into Hove. And the hostel is very close to Cop Cars at Little Western Street, where Stephen would have known of it. It's probable that Stephen and his drug buddies would have been customers at Cop Cars drug deals. Welsh was 37 years of age when his charred body was found on Devil Dyke's golf course just north of Brighton. Group of golfers at the golf course on the 4th of September 2010 were walking to the 18th tee when one of them hit a rather bad shot which went into some bushes. Searching for the ball, the golfer, Mr. McNeil, looked into the bushes at an area that had been damaged by fire, and it didn't take him very long to find the burnt remains of a human being. The police said that the body had tattoos on upper arms, one of which was unfinished. The police also said the body had an upper dental plate with five false teeth, which was thought very unusual in the person of the age, as it was thought to be late teens or early 20s. The body was 5'4" tall and of a slim build. Officers revealed that they believed the foot was removed by an animal as it dragged the body a few feet from the point where it was torched. They were unable to say if the body was clothed or not. Later, the body was identified as 37-year-old Stefan Welsh. The cause of death was identified as catastrophic brain trauma caused by a heavy blunt object. Stefan was murdered elsewhere before being transported to the golf club on South Downs and set alight. Stefan struggled with drug and alcohol addiction throughout his life, and it often brought him in conflict with the police. He was well known to them. Stefan was a drug addict claiming disability allowance. When he was a young child, Stefan was upstairs in his family home at Playden Close, Whitehawk in Brighton, when his father repeatedly stabbed his mother, Pauline Akehurst, who was aged 27 at the time, with two screwdrivers. Her throat was then cut with a bread knife. Stefan's father was just sentenced to 4 years. Stefan was brought up in a children's home in Hove as a result. He had a trusting nature while mixing with those likely to get him into trouble. On Tuesday the 7th of September, means this 2010, Babak Aran, aged 44, and his sons Sean Aran, aged 21, and Navid Aran, aged 23, were arrested by the police. And then they were arrested, released on bail as police carried out their investigations. They all lived at the same address at Fishersgate and Port Slade on the edge of Hove. They were charged with murder and conspiracy to pervert the course of justice. They were charged with the offence on the following Sunday, and which time they were remanded in custody. Babak and Navid denied the claims that they removed evidence from their home. Sean was charged with murder at the initial hearing at Lewis Crown Court, while his father Babak and his brother, who was a well-known local boxer, Navid, were given bail for £300,000 and ordered to hand over their passports and given a curfew. They denied conspiracy to pervert the course of justice by helping to remove all traces of an alleged murder at St. Richard's Road, Fishersgate, Port Slade. Babak and Navid were well known in Hove, having run a Georgie's Bistro in George Street, Hove, for 10 years. A typical greasy spoon calf. Babak was the chef and Navid was the waiter. The police were investigating the murder by getting samples of petrol from 26 garages in a three-mile radius of the golf club and to compare them with the fuel used to burn the body, and then to study CCTV footage once a match was made to a garage. The day before he died, Stefan Welsh told his probation officer that he'd been threatened over drug debts. Stefan Welsh had first met Sean Aran while in prison. Aran had been jailed for 2 years in August 2008 for attacking and robbing a 15-year-old boy. Sean Aran was also on the sex offenders register for sexually assaulting a 15-year-old girl. His friends say that it was his girlfriend. Mr. Welsh had looked after and protected Sean Aran while in jail. And on one occasion, he stopped others from stabbing Sean Aran. That was Stephen Welsh protecting Sean. The pair maintained contact and saw each other regularly after they were released. As Welsh lived in Hove and Aran a bus ride away in Port Slade. The court case started on the 7th of March 2011. It turned out that the person who found the body on the golf course and initially thought that it was a dead deer was a retired teacher, Malcolm McNeil, who was a former deputy head teacher at St Mark's School, Manor Road, Whitehawk. He had taught Stefan as a 10-year-old and remembered him as a pleasant pupil. He said he was shocked when he discovered who the body was. It was also revealed that the day before his death, Mr. Welsh, who was a heavy heroin user, told his probation officer that he'd been threatened over the drug debt. The jury, during the course of the court case, were taken to the isolated spot where Mr. Welsh's body was discovered, and also to where he lived at the Phase 1 hostel in Oriental Place in Brighton, and to the Aran's home in St. Richard's Road in Port Slade. The jury were also shown a video of cafe owner Babak Aran filling his Hyundai Santa Fe with diesel at a BP garage in Kingsway, Hove, after the killing. Navid Aran filled a green plastic canister with petrol before they paid and drove off in a 4x4 vehicle. It was alleged that Babak and Navid helped Sean Aran move all traces of the killing from their home before before disposing of the body at the golf course. Babak Aran's 4x4 was detected near the golf course as detectives launched their investigation into the killing on September the 4th, 2010. Automatic number plate recognition cameras on a police vehicle parked in Saddlescombe Road picked up the Santa Fe's registration number as it passed. It was claimed that Stefan had told Claire Simpson, who lived with him in the same hostel at Oriental Place, that he'd been tied up and cling film wrapped around his head, leaving it difficult for him to breathe. Claire said Stefan had told her that Sean Aran had offered him £1,500 to pose as a corpse for pictures, hours before he was found dead. She said he told her that Aran had bound his hands and feet with cable ties and wrapped his head in 12 layers of cling film. It was thought that Sean Aran was claiming to have killed people who had not paid their drug debts, and the photo was supposed to have been proof of this. Stefan was set free by Sean Aran, but hours later it's alleged that Sean Aran battered Stefan Welsh to death. When Sean Aran gave his evidence, he claimed that he wore a bulletproof vest as he feared for his life, as he claimed he was in trouble with a gang known as the Scousers on the mean streets of Brighton. He said the Scousers controlled the hard drug dealing in Brighton. This seemed to be true at the time. The Scousers were a feared group by the drug community of Brighton and Hove. Philip Gambetta was a defence witness for Sean Aran, and he said that Aran was in fear of his life as he had ripped somebody off close to the Scousers. Sean owed money to people for cannabis. It was said that many people on the Hangleton and Nola Straits in Hove wore bulletproof vests to protect themselves from being shot or stabbed, and Gambetta himself had been beaten up several times for suffering a black eye and broken ribs. The next witness called was Lucy Spring, who was living with Sean Aran at the Aran family home in Richards Road in Portslade. She said that heroin addict Stefan Welsh had saved Aran's life when they were in prison, and he would often stay around there with the Aran family. Lucy said that she remembered when Sean said that he wanted to cover the bedroom with plastic sheets, and he wanted to know what it felt like to shoot someone. He asked her how she would feel about having a dead body in the house for a few days. She thought he was joking, but when she returned home at 5:30 p.m. on September the 3rd, 2010, Sean did not allow her to use the room. She said that Sean appeared very agitated. After Navid and Babuk Aran had returned home, Sean suddenly told her to go with him to his mother's house in Wilford Road, Hove. That's Sean Aran's mother's house. She said that Babuk Aran dropped them off there, and Sean went into the back garden to smoke cannabis while Babuk drove off in his Hyundai Santa Fe. Lucy Spring continued, "I sat and watched EastEnders with his mother, and then he asked me to go outside because he had something to tell me. He said that his friend Jay had turned up at the house earlier in the day with Jay's cousin. He said there was a scuffle. A knife had been pulled, which Jay's cousin had accidentally fallen onto. He didn't say what the scuffle was about, but he said it was all sorted now and it was all stable." A toxicologist, John Slaughter, next gave evidence at the court case and said high levels of heroin were found in samples taken from Stefan Welsh's body, which indicated that he was under the influence of heroin shortly before he died, possibly to the extent where he was unconscious or comatose. The heroin levels could have been life-threatening to someone who did not have a tolerance to the drug. And the high levels of heroin it remained in the samples indicated that it was ingested less than an hour before the victim had died. Sean Aran admitted lying to the police while giving evidence to the court. It was a lie when he said that the last time he saw Stefan was when he came to the family home with a bloody nose and told him that the Scousers had slapped him over a £40 drug debt. Blood matching Stefan's blood group in Sean's bedroom and in the kitchen and in the car boot of Babuk's car, this would tie in with a theory that Aran battered Stefan to death at the house in St. Richard's Road on September the 3rd, and his family, or Sean Aran's family, helped dispose of the body. Sean Aran claimed that if he admitted to the police that Stefan was in the house, it would have caused him trouble and his family problems with the Scousers. The police said that they had a number of people blaming the Scousers for killing Stefan. It seemed like a campaign of disinformation. Sean Aran said, "I can look after myself. I can move around and I can disappear, but my family can't. The Scousers have a reputation for extreme violence, for burning down houses and things like that." It was never actually explained who the Scousers actually were, only that they were a gang from Liverpool supplying drugs in the Brighton and Hove area. Anyhow, on the 31st of March 2011, the jury found Sean Horan guilty of murder and also of conspiracy to pervert the course of justice. He was sentenced to 19 years. His father, Babouk Horan, aged 44, and his brother, Navid Horan, of the same address, he would have been 23, were jailed for 7 years and 6 years respectively, both being found guilty of perverting the course of justice. After the trial, people that knew Sean Horan claimed that he tried to be a gangster figure and tried to big himself up. He was a street drug dealer and a heavy cannabis user, which would make him unstable in his moods. It was suggested that he killed Stefan by mistake and panicked and involved his father and brother in the murder. One friend of Sean talked of him getting into fights and he would carry a replica gun around with him. He left the gun at a girlfriend's house, and when her mother found it, she took it to the cafe run by Sean Horan's father, who just threw it in the bin. It is claimed that the Scousers did exist as a group, and the police seemed unlikely to act against them as they distanced themselves from the drug dealing, and the people were too frightened to tell on their activities. It was claimed that the Scousers were involved in drug dealing and money lending. However, it was also said that Sean Horan was a plastic gangster who tried to blame others for his crime. Sean Horan was refused permission to appeal. George's Cafe is still operating in George Street. Navid still serves customers while his brother Sean resides in an inside prison. Drug dealing remains a huge problem in the Brighton and Hove areas. Well, so ends another podcast. I'm taking a short break now of 2 or 3 weeks while I'm working on a couple of other complicated cases, one of which is the Retterton shootings, the Essex Boys shootings, as there's so much information to go through. Well, I'll be back in mid-September, and of course I will be posting the 2021 ghost story for Christmas. And so until next time, I will thank you all for listening. I thank Damselfly for providing the background music, and I'll say goodbye.